Crisco's radio newspaper with Bernardine Flynn, brought to you by Crisco, the pure all-vegetable shortening. And now, here is Bernardine Flynn.
Thank you, Ed Roberts, and hello, everyone. Well, it's been almost 36 hours since we first heard the news of the invasion of Western Europe. And though the news has had to be scarce for military reasons, it has been uniformly good. So now let's hear the latest information about what's going on. We switch you to the New York headquarters of CBS World News for the report of Alan Jackson, one of Columbia's news editors.
The news on the invasion is beginning to arrive in larger quantities today. For the past several hours, the teletypes in the CBS newsroom have clanged out bulletin bells a number of times. And eyewitness broadcasts from abroad are becoming more numerous, too. Just about an hour ago, Allied Headquarters issued a special announcement on the invasion. It reported that all of our beachheads have now been cleared of the enemy. Presumably, though, some of these are still under artillery fire. Also, Headquarters reports that some of the beach positions have been enlarged and have joined up with those flanking them. And along this same line, there's an unofficial report that some of our reinforced airborne troops who landed in the interior have been able to fight their way toward the coast and join forces with the beachheads. This, however, is not official. Another note from Allied Headquarters: heavy fighting is taking place inland from the beaches today, and German counterattacks have been repulsed near the town of Caen. Earlier this morning, a Headquarters officer said the reports coming in then were disappointing, but by midday, he said, they showed decided improvement. And now for our next spot of invasion news, suppose we switch to London for the report of CBS correspondent Richard C. Hottolett. Go ahead, London.
This is London. Here's a summary of the day's information learned at Shafe. Early this morning, it became clear that resistance was stiffening, and it seemed that our progress was not all we had hoped for. But by noon, the situation improved. This is a time when fatigue begins to tell. That happens in every operation after about 48 hours. Many of the men were seasick going over. They've been wet and without sleep, and it takes a little while for them to get their second wind. There's nothing critical about the present situation, but it's clear that the army is up against some very stiff fighting. The weather is now described as disappointing, not as good as we had hoped for. In the Caen area yesterday evening, the enemy launched an armored counterattack, but it was repelled. It's further stated that all of the beaches are now clear, and some have linked up. The naval guns are continuing to assist the ground forces, and there's been some trouble with a few coastal batteries. They've been very obstinate indeed. Bombing and shellfire have failed to silence them. The phrase, "the beaches are clear," does not, of course, mean that they are no longer subject to enemy artillery fire. Headquarters continues to refuse to divulge specific areas or place names, but we do know that troops and supplies continued to be put ashore on all the beaches. Today, Allied medium bombers have been hitting road and rail communications south of the assault area. No railway line between Rouen and Paris is operating. The bridges that have been destroyed by Allied bombing. Only one highway bridge continues to carry traffic between those two points. The Germans were slow in destroying vital bridges in the assault area, and Allied airborne troops took several of them intact. The enemy air reaction is becoming a little more spirited, but the Germans have yet to employ any considerable portion of their total strength. The Germans are now saying that the Allied bridgehead at the mouth of the Orne River extends on both sides of it for a distance of 20 miles along the coast. Berlin also says that it's 6 miles deep in parts, which means that the Germans concede we have already occupied an area of about 100 square miles. The Germans are adopting a more cautious tone in the news they're putting out. This morning, they claimed that all the bridgeheads had been wiped out except one. Now they casually mention another bridgehead northwest of Bayeux, which they call a British lodgment. The latest report from the Cherbourg Peninsula, about which there hasn't been much news since early yesterday, is of airborne operation. Our own Allied Air Force says that late last night and early this morning, waves of paratroops and glider troops reinforced the units in that area. And the latest report, again from a German source this evening, is that our airborne troops there have fought their way back to establish contact with our troops landing from the sea. I return you now to CBS in New York.
Eyewitness dispatches from correspondents with the invasion forces are beginning to come in today. One dispatch tells of the American infantrymen who went ashore in the first waves. and apparently they had both good and bad luck. In one sector, for instance, they met little opposition and quickly plunged on into the interior. In another area, though, German machine gun fire pinned down the invaders before they could move off the beaches. Bert Brandt, an American news photographer, spent a half an hour on one sector of the beaches yesterday, and he says it was hotter than anything at Anzio. The first assault troops who stormed those particular beaches were mowed down by German crossfire, according to Brandt. Succeeding waves, however, climbed over the dead and wounded and kept punching away until a foothold had been established. Incidentally, it's revealed today that Lieutenant General Omar Bradley is commanding the United States ground forces in this assault on Europe. Another correspondence dispatch, this one from the American cruiser Augusta, says that the German 7th and 15th Armies, commanded personally by Marshal Rommel, are rushing armored and infantry divisions to the fighting areas. And the Germans are also sending in airborne reinforcements, according to one report. This seems a little bit unusual, for a defending army, that is, and it may indicate that the enemy already is in difficulty in the critical Cherbourg front of Normandy. On the other hand, though, it may indicate nothing of the sort. Our air superiority is emphasized by a British radio report, which says that we now have a superiority in the skies of some 200 to 1 in the invasion area. We've lost a few planes, naturally. During overnight reinforcing operations, 12 of our C-47 troop transports were lost, and 12 gliders were reported missing. Altogether, about 70 aircraft have been lost since the invasion started early yesterday morning. But apparently, those losses represent only a very small portion of the total engaged. Returning flyers say the whole Cherbourg Peninsula was a mass of white and colored parachutes this morning, where the overnight reinforcements had landed. One of our flyers, Lieutenant Leif Johansson of Cambridge, Massachusetts, a Thunderbolt pilot, came back this morning with a description of a French coastal town near the Seine estuary, a town which apparently has been taken by the Allies. Johansson says that down below he could see Allied tanks everywhere, some just rumbling into the town's outskirts, others parked under the trees. All of the pilots report an extraordinary contrast between the smoke and flame-shrouded beachhead areas and the peaceful countryside a few miles inland, where cows are grazing placidly and Frenchmen ride bicycles along the dirt roads. One pilot says, "Brother, this is some war when you dive down to strafe a moving vehicle and it turns out only to be a Frenchman peacefully riding to town in a bread truck." By the way, here's a brief idea of just how big an Allied Navy is now churning up those waters between Britain and France. London reports that more officers and men are engaged in these present Channel operations than were in the entire Royal Navy at the outbreak of the war. And incidentally, one of the first assault boats to nose out onto the beaches of France early yesterday morning was a boat commanded by Lieutenant Abe Condiotti, a 23-year-old American from Brooklyn. On board was an infantry company commanded by Captain Leonard Schroeder of Baltimore, Maryland. So Schroeder, in all probability, was the first American and perhaps even Allied soldier to invade the continent from the sea. Well, that's the invasion news as it looks to this minute. Now, back to Bernadine Flynn in Chicago.
Thank you, Alan Jackson and Richard Hudlett. Friends, there is little else to talk about except what is happening in Europe. The Allied invasion forces have entered their second day of fighting against the enemy in France. D-Day was a day we all had been waiting for. It was bound to come, and when it did come, it was a solemn one. The sober note to us here in America is that not all of our men will come home when it is over. On the other hand, our wounded now have a better chance than at any time in the past. Extensive preparations have been made to care for the casualties of land, sea, and air.
Yes, and there's some other things for which we can be grateful. This invasion is a military undertaking. Landing on a hostile shore is a very difficult job at its best. But it is a job that's in the hands of experienced, competent soldiers. The men under them are well trained. The equipment they're using is highly specialized.
It wasn't very long ago that a farm woman in the Welsh Hills looked through her kitchen window toward the sea. As she looked out, she said, "The mist is hanging heavy today." That woman had no idea that the mist she saw was man-made. The white fog that clouded her vision was an invisible cloak that fighting men have always longed for. She did not know that a great scene was being staged, a scene which was protecting men busy unloading supplies from landing craft. It was all a rehearsal for the landings made yesterday on the coast of France.
That's right, Byrne. And experts say this fog alone will have saved thousands of lives as our boys forced bridgeheads in Hitler's fortress. It's a great protection to our fighting men. However, it isn't new. It was used in the Battle of Waterloo and in the First World War. But it's never been so effective as it is today.
Yesterday, when the Americans, British, and Canadians stormed that French coastline, Many of us in this country didn't know that the best-equipped army in the world was on its way. But when every city awoke and learned the news, a new kind of patriotism seemed to sweep the nation. In New York City, war plant workers on the night shift heard the news in the early morning. Many of them paused for a few minutes and bowed their heads in silent prayer. Men and women on their way to work eagerly bought newspapers and read every word about the invasion. In almost every public school, principals held special assemblies where the pupils sang hymns. Churches opened their doors, and as the day went on, worshippers entered to pray in numbers seldom seen before. Mass meetings were organized on the spur of the moment, and the local chapters of the American Red Cross were deluged with telephone calls from people who wanted to make appointments to give blood. One donor was Corporal Milton Brower, a United States Army engineer who was on furlough after 29 months of service in Alaska and the Aleutians. Said the soldier, "I've helped give blood plasma to wounded men. I know what it can do."
And in Washington, D.C., when the historic flash reached the wires, it found most of the Capitol home in bed, too. The streets were almost deserted. Suddenly, government buildings began to show lights in their windows. The busiest place was the Office of War Information.
Yesterday, after the broadcast, I took a walk through the many streets of Chicago. I watched the serious faces of the people as they walked by. Many of them seemed to be unaware of anything but the headline newspaper they were reading. Youngsters were more interested in the headlines than in the funny sheets. A taxi driver was telling a bank official about his son and the paratroops in England, perhaps now behind the German lines in France. Radios could be heard from almost every open window. In the stores, shoppers talked quietly. On my way home, I stopped in at a small church. Unashamed of tears, proud in their devotion, people knelt in prayer. Many of them prayed not only for their own sons or husbands, but for their friends, their neighbors, and for boys they never knew. One woman held a small picture tightly in her hand, a picture of an Air Corps officer. As I left the church, a young Marine sergeant entered. He was wearing the Purple Heart.
And news of the Allied landing spread quickly throughout Russia and touched off enthusiastic demonstrations which have rarely been seen since the war began. American war correspondents in Moscow were the first to break the news, and they were quickly surrounded by cheering crowds who rushed to shake their hands and offer congratulations. And as the Soviet people waited for their own armies to strike from the east, last night they marched through the streets playing Russian war marches, and one tune that issued from the blaring bands we all know. It was Yankee Doodle.
The people in London also showed happiness, although at first they were skeptical about the invasion reports. And in Australia, the invasion news sent the presses of the newspapers rolling with their first extras since the landings in Italy. Civilians and servicemen bought the editions as fast as they were published, and the American soldiers huddled close to the radios in the service clubs.
Which is something most everyone did in all parts of the world.
Yes, Ed. And another thing noticeable is the relief from tension on the part of everyone since the news of the invasion has reached us. Even the paratroopers, who were the first units to land in France on Tuesday morning, are all said to have expressed how relieved they were to be on their way at last. One soldier remarked, "This is Hitler's headache. From now on, it's march straight through to Berlin." Another soldier, stepping into a plane, said, "Keep your fingers crossed. Pray for us, and we can't lose."
And now to summarize our information to date, Supreme Allied Headquarters in Britain has announced that all our beachheads on the Normandy coast of France have been cleared of the enemy. Some of the beachheads have been enlarged, and in some cases, beachheads have been linked with those adjoining them. German counterattacks have been repulsed near the town of Caen. The Germans are reported bringing up reinforcements, in some cases, by air. Allied troops also have been reinforced by air, and British airborne troops captured several bridges north of Caen. And that winds up another edition of Crisco's radio newspaper. Join us again tomorrow, friends, at this same time. Today, Alan Jackson reported the news from New York, and CBS correspondent Richard C. Hudlett was heard from London. Now, until tomorrow, this is
Bernardine Flynn
and Ed Roberts
saying goodbye for Procter & Gamble, the makers of Crisco, the pure all-vegetable shortening.
We return you now to New York.